Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ganga Kording. Ganga holds a master's degree in psychology and took sannyas in 1975. Ganga lived with Osho for 25 years and has been leading meditation trainings and retreats for over 40 years. I'm so happy to have Ganga on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Ganga, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. Enjoying, looking forward to talking to you.
Likewise. Okay, Ganga, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, there are actually two starts. One is in 74. I was coming out of my house and having big difficulties with in a love affair and thinking, I have to learn how to love. I don't know how to do that. And then in very short time, I saw myself involved in humanistic growth processes, just taking part as part of my job in the children and youth psychiatry, and to get the team informed what is available on new therapy methods, not knowing that I would have to actually take part in it myself. So these first groups, they were by chance all led by sannyasis, and which I didn't know anything about at that time. So a few months later, I found myself having made the jump to quit my job, say to my boyfriend, I'm going to go to this intensive in London. You can come along, but I'm going anyway. And that was my first intensive enlightenment or Satori group, which I took part. And that was at Easter in 75. And then a few months later, I was in Pune because I wanted to take Osho from him directly. Then a few months later, after I kind of closed everything down, I just knew I have to do that. And everybody was thinking, you're telling me you're crazy. I just got a job, lifelong job at the government in Berlin. Everybody is dreaming of it. And I just felt so suffocated. There must be more than having a good job and a safe life. I want to find out how this business with love is going. So then I came to Pune in 75, end of 75, and took sannyas. And this is where I experienced unconditional love for the first time. So that was so overwhelming that I knew it's the right place for me. And there's actually a sweet story to this too. At the end of this first Satori, I was sitting the next morning in the group room listening to a discourse, and there was a big picture of Osho hanging, and I liked the way this guy looked. And so I was just looking, and while I was looking, Osho literally slipped into my heart through my ear. I still have that physical sensation in my ear. And yeah, that's how it all started.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you have been leading meditation groups for over 40 years, and that's a long time, and you clearly have a lot of experience. And you are, in fact, an expert in a particular method called Huizin, which I guess is a new name for the same process you described, the intensive awareness or enlightenment. So my first question was, how did your interest in this process come about? But I guess now I got it. So that was the first time you did a meditation type of group with sannyasins. And then I wanted to know from you, who are the expert in this process, the origin of this method of self-inquiring, and if Osho has ever spoken about it and explained how it works.
Okay. Can I tell another story before I get into this, before I forget?
Of course, feel free.
This is when you asked how I met Osho. Actually, he met me first, but I didn't know he was meeting me. That was when I was 16 and lying at the beach after a night in the disco and having this vision that a man is approaching to me with a long beard and a long white dress with high collar and cufflinks, floating towards me, holding an orange, a big, huge, big orange flower in his hand, something like a mixture of a hibiscus and a rose. And I know he wants to give this to me. And all I can think of is he doesn't have a belly button. And wondering, but how do I know this? I've never seen this man before. And so I came out of it. And then I felt very embarrassed because that was like a time of intense studies of existentialism, reading Camus and Sartre and doing stuff like that, smoking Gauloises and drinking black coffee. And so when I did, then I kind of just pushed it aside because all I knew, there is some message in it, which I one day will find out, but I had no clue what it was. And I felt embarrassed because I thought, oh my God, now Jesus appeared in front of me. And that was the last what I wanted to be connected or reminded with. And only much, much later, when I was already in Pune for many years after at the end of a group, I was remembering again, oh, that was Osho. Because what I also understood, what the meaning of this not having a belly button is, it's a symbol for enlightenment. And in the Hindu mythology, that you would twitch twice born, like that he is out of the wheel of karma, so he doesn't have to be reborn again. So he doesn't he's out of this wheel of karma of having to be reborn, and that symbolized in having no belly button. And I was so amazed about the creativity of the unconscious mind to send a symbol which later on became very meaningful for me. Okay, so now to the other question. So the Satori process is invented by Charles Berner, and he was a family therapist in the Bronx. He was also a meditator, sitting zazen in front of the wall and with the koan, who am I? So since he was familiar with that method and also with the Carl Rogerian method of co-counseling, of non-directive asking questions where two people sit together. And so he had this stroke of genius to combine these two methods where you work together in dyads and with the koan, who am I, and a few side branches of that. So, but that's like, who am I is the master key. And he designed first, he called it Enlightenment Intensive, and that was in the 60s, where people sit facing each other, and one is giving the instructions, tell me who you are, and the other one is listening, and then the roles get reversed. So each partner has the same amount of time to work and to listen, but the speciality is there is no communication. It's not a dialogue. The intention is to use the presence of another to help the person to communicate, to express what their experience is. Because if you, in order to be able to express something in words, also in words, you need to bring it to a different level of consciousness. And then you can listen to yourself. So this is like basically the history. Charles Berner himself came to Pune, but he didn't stay there. And Osho liked this approach very much. So he sent everybody into the Enlightenment Intensive, or as he renamed it, Intensive Enlightenment. And many years later, there were a bunch of us sitting together and sharing how our experience is with leading this process. And we came to the conclusion that it's actually, we want to try to rename it into Awareness Intensive, because that's what it's turned into much more than Enlightenment Intensive, because people get into the wrong ideas of that there's a goal, that there's something to reach. So yeah, so since it's in the 90s, it's renamed into Awareness Intensive, and there are two forms. Short form is the Who Is In, and the longer form is the Satori process.
Okay, and, well, thank you so much for this very comprehensive explanation. And I'd love to hear if Osho spoke about it and what Osho said about this process. And also, I'm aware that at some point Osho changed the question from who am I to who is in. And maybe you can explain why Osho did that.
When we didn't know what to do, because he would just say, okay, you do this. And then we would, at the end of the group, we would go to group darshan, which I think is a unique setup, where the group leader and the group together sit in front of the master. And first he addresses the group leader, asking how anything about the group, and if there was something, you would say it, and it could be a personal thing or it could be something general about the group. And then he would, like people who were in the audience in the beginning, people could, if they had a question, they could ask. Later on, you couldn't do that anymore. And then there were also no more group darshans. But in the beginning, so we had basically two ways. We would either write a letter to him, and which would then somebody would bring the answer back. And so for him, the way there are a few records left where he gave quite detailed instructions. And for him, basically, it was the intensity, just to keep, like his words were, just keep them up. Because we would start very early, had a session before Dynamic. Dynamic was at 6, so the first session was at 5 something. And it would go till 10:30, 11. So there was very short sleep, and the group was 3 days. And so if there was something we didn't know, we would just write to him, and he would come back with an answer. But like he didn't change the structure, he just what God added was the active meditation, like dynamic meditation and kundalini meditation, and listening to the discourse.
You mentioned that you had the great opportunity to conduct the groups in freedom, and then you could sit in darshan with Osho or write letters directly to him. So I'd love to hear if you got any direct guidance from Osho on how to lead the group, or if there is anything that Osho told you that you remember that was significant.
So there was in the Mystic Rose series, there Osho in one discourse just totally hammered the question, who am I, as the most stupid question there is. And he cut it into pieces, threw it out the window. And of course, we all were kind of shocked because all these years he has been emphasizing this is the only important question and everything else is irrelevant. So after this discourse, I sent in a question and he said, well, what shall I do or we do in this process where we do nothing else but ask this most stupid question for many hours every day? And so the answer, shall I look for another job? And the answer came back, the new question is, who is in? So then from then on, we were working with who is in. But otherwise, I was very shy. So I didn't ask if there was something, I didn't ask. So when he was asking me anything about the group, I felt it was going fine and it was going fine. So I just said that.
I did this group in Pune and it was my first intensive meditation group. First time I was there, I was quite young, I think I was 22 years old. And I must say that it wasn't easy. It wasn't a walk in the park. As you mentioned, you know, like waking up very early, sleeping little time, always this question and being kind of secluded in a room and all of that. And I remember I was full of anger and, you know, pretty much for the whole 3 days, I was just shouting. And It is common for people to experience frustration and anger at the beginning of this process.
Absolutely, because it's kind of everything, every entertainment is taken away. There's no escape. You know? So you're just sitting there with yourself and either you make that turn that you really follow the instructions of looking in and intending to have a direct experience of who is in, who you are, till you start doing this, till you kind of, you know, like a dog taking up the scent and going, aha, and follows, till the first direct experiences are happening, it is extremely frustrating because it's the total opposite of how we like to live, how we are educated. Nobody told us how to look in. We are all very other-oriented. And because that's easy, huh? All education, be it the religious or the parental education or in school, is to learn how to live together with others. And we learn from others, and parents and teachers to a certain degree, I guess, need to take on the responsibility before we can do it ourselves. But then when we are grown up, part of maturing is to really own, to take the responsibility and not behave in a way as we have been told. We might come to the same conclusion, then it's ours, that's fine. But the ability to respond to ourselves, we need to learn ourselves. I have not met anybody who has been learning that in their primary conditioning. There we learn how we can adjust, how we can be polite, how we can live together with others. But how to look in and to really respect our own self in the together, living together with others, at least I didn't learn it, and I haven't met anybody who learned this from their parents or from their teachers. It's extremely challenging to sit in this simple process.
More recently, in 2007, you founded the Academy of Awareness and Creative Expression. It's somehow the essence of your professional and personal experience. So can you talk us through what you offer in this academy?
The main work is really the who is in and the Satori process. I mean, for me, working with it for such a long time, I'm much more free in delineating what I think is important in this process. And for me, this has really to do with learning to make that turn, this 180 degree turn from being other oriented to self oriented. And then the next step is how to live that in daily life, because who wants to sit in a retreat for a long time? So how to, because many people came to me and said, you know, we do this and we love it and great things are happening. And then we go back in our everyday life and it doesn't take long and the old habits, everything has been, is burdening our self again. So I was kind of brainstorming what is it for me, and like my own personal experience, that if I'm not in this process, then I like to be in my garden, or I like to paint. And in that, it's, I can see the effect. The more I am able to go in, the more I'm connected with myself, the more I can express, the more alert, open, sensitive I am. But I need to practice it in all kinds of different areas of life. And this is how it came about, that I started to look into, well, how can this happen? So I offered combination processes where there would be first a Satori, and then there would be all kinds of different creative processes. And like in my very first, in one of my first darshans, I spoke to Osho about something which happens in meditation, where I was feeling that the two sides of myself, they're just leaning against each other. They're not really solidly connected, as if they could fall apart. And so there he said, it will be very good for you to do Enlightenment Intensive. And so I went, of course, to do it. And this is kind of the academy is kind of an outcome of this, because I started to pay attention to what's happening to me when I'm in this process, and I'm in it a lot. So it really bridges the two sides of the brain, and the approach, like the who am I approach, especially as it was in the early days, the who am I, is much more left side brain oriented. So it addresses the structure to find out, to put into to words. So it's but the left right side brain is also involved, because as you go inside and you open up to yourself without any ideas what to find, but welcome what you're finding, there again is the right side brain involved, because if you go in with any ideas, then you are not open to what is. You're structuring, you're editing. So both sides are represented.
Okay, well, thank you for that. And I think the fact that you want to help people bring the insights that they've gained through the groups into their daily life is very valuable. And you also mentioned that you love painting. And I'm aware that you have a secret passion, which is Chinese calligraphy. So I'd love to hear how this passion came about and what is about Chinese calligraphy that you love so much.
It is, it's kind of the same as sitting there working with the koan, because the medium of the Chinese or Japanese paper and ink and brush. There is whatever you put on the paper, that's it. You cannot correct it. It's not like with acrylic. If you don't like it, you paint over, you do it here and there. It's just what it is. And on top of it, it's when the painting is not wet, it looks completely different than when it's dry. So you do something and you see, oh, this looks beautiful. And then the next morning you look at it and I say, well, what did I see? And because it's completely different. So everything which has to do with wanting to do a beautiful painting, anything which has to do with goal orientedness, you can forget about. It's like what comes out, comes out. So I'm calling these characters of the moment, and I'm not using the Chinese characters. I mean, I know a few, and in the beginning I would work with them, but now I don't do that anymore. I just encourage people to just look in, be there, and take the brush, and when the brush wants to move, to do their stroke, and then just to look at it and to wait. So whatever come, and it's amazing to see that people, after a very short time, after a couple of hours, their uniqueness starts to come out, even if they make very simple strokes. But soon they learn to see, to get a sense for if they do something which is really coming from inside, or if they have an idea, I want to paint a flower or a house or a bird or whatever, which what we connect with is usually to paint something. So actually my own, the only thing which I can find myself saying over and over is don't paint, just let it happen. And we do like impossible tasks. I ask people, give us a theme. And then one would say, who just had been sitting at the river and listening to the sound of the river, paint the sound of the river this morning, or the moving clouds. How do you do this? Nobody knows, and everybody does it. And so by and by, a confidence, like a joy to express, it's more like kids. When we painted as kids, we didn't have any ideas of making a good painting or being a failure or making a spot or something. And so there is an incredible opening and joy bubbling up.
Okay, so where people can find you if they want to join one of your beautiful groups and experiences that you offer?
Well, they can look at my website, awareness-academy.com.
Okay, great. And I'll link your website in the show notes of this episode so everyone can click there and find you. So we are heading towards the end of the show, and I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, I first make myself a cup of coffee after I have drunk two glasses of lukewarm water. And then I look out where the cats are, who of the cats is lying in the basket in front of the door. And then I drink my coffee, look out of the window, and do nothing, which is not easy for me, but I give this time to me. And then I have my breakfast and get on with the day.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite meditation is working in the garden. And second favorite is no dimension meditation, and which I, in the groups, I do regularly. And I like the garden meditation because the garden is such a peaceful, powerful teacher in presence, in surrender, in beauty, in awe. There is just a lot of gratefulness of being alive, being part of. And there's so many miracles in one garden. It's unbelievable. So the garden is a great teacher for me. And I love plants, and I like them to just like live like me, like that they get their space to do their thing. My garden is very wild. I call it the tamed chaos. And so I don't have like a straight pathways and here's this and here's this. Everything there. There are many wild vegetables here in Corfu, and if they turn up in the middle of the rose bed, they are allowed to stay there, and I pick them from there. And yeah, so it's the garden is a huge reminder to that I like what I actually see as the basic teaching I learned from Osho. I don't have to do anything to deserve to be myself. All I really need to do is to just welcome myself, which includes welcome everybody, everything living around me. So that's my favorite meditation.
Okay, so the last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
For me, Osho is just here. It sounds strange, but in a way, often I cannot differentiate. It doesn't seem to be a big separation inside, and I feel more open to Osho than ever before, which also means I listen a lot to discourses. I love to also sometimes to read, like reading I do. If there's something where I don't know how to go about or how to understand something, I just take a book and open a page. And very often it's right there what I need to hear. So I feel Osho's presence. Yeah, he's here.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now that's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. So that's the end of the show. It's been a real pleasure connecting to you and getting to know you a little bit more, even if just a short chat, but I feel you. And it was interesting to learn about the Who Is In process. And then as we were chatting offline, you live in Corfu, where there are a number of sannyasins who also gather there and live there. So it's a wonderful place to connect with the Osho community. And so hope to go back to Corfu as soon as possible, so to see you and the other friends. And for now, I'll send you a big hug and lots of love.
Love to you too, and thank you very much. And then I can tell you all the other stories, which might be a bit more interesting than just talking who is in and who am I. Okay. Lots of love to you.
Yeah, definitely. We can have another podcast and talk about, I'm sure you have lots of stories in 40 years, 25 years with Osho, 40 years of leading groups. So you have lots to share. But today we focus on the within, that is your speciality. And next time we can give space to something else. Thank you, Ganga. Lots of love.
Lots of love to you too, Smaram.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.